All right. This is our last class, First Clance. Looks like we have an awful lot of verses, but the last three practices are very much summaries. And then the last four verses of the text are traditional elements that you'll find in many, many texts. So, questions about the meaning, translation points, etc. Susan. Put another one over here. Yeah. Isabel, can you give that to Raquel to hold or pass around? Should be on.
In verse 37, mm-hmm. The second line, it says, wisdom freed from the three spheres.
Yep.
What are those?
Excuse me, I'm a little bit tired because I flew in from Toronto this morning. Do you remember verse 30? No, I'm not sure. Let me just check to see if it's actually the same. I just translated it in two different words in English just to make life more difficult. Of course, I did. I'm pretty sure. Three spheres?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The action, the acted on, and the subject of the action. I think you put it in parentheses.
Yes. I was a little inconsistent in the translation. It's the same word in Tibetan. So I probably should change that to three domains. But wisdom freed from the three domains. Okay. Anything else? George?
Is this on? In verse 35,
mm-hmm.
What does it mean to crush or destroy reactive emotions when we are resting in our awareness of their arising?
Yes. There we are. Burjum Jepa, which is as they arise, you put them down. Well,
repress all of these things. Huh?
In martial arts, people say, well, you know, this is the ancient system and it hasn't been changed for 5 centuries or 10 centuries or something like that. Well, that may not be the best form, because things are refined over time, and techniques become more subtle and more effective. So I think we have to allow for the evolution of methods. And you certainly find this in Mahamudra and Dzogchen. And I think you also find it within the Theravadin, but I'm not as familiar with the Theravadin, where there is an evolution in how you work with stuff that arises in practice. In the beginning, it feels like you're fighting it. In the middle, you're transforming it. And in the end, you're just letting it play out. So when they use vocabulary like crushing reactive emotions such as craving, where did you have destroy?
That's another translation.
Ah, okay. You can understand this in a couple of ways. First off, I think we all know it doesn't mean to repress them, because repressing them basically leaves them intact but puts them out of the conscious mind, so they go on to wreak havoc without us knowing about it. Let's take it all three lines of this. When reactive emotions acquire momentum, it's hard to make remedies work. The point here, this is a straight application of the Taoist principle that problem, the earlier you address a problem, the easier it is to remedy it. So if you address things when they're small, it goes smoothly. You can make adjustments and it can be quite smooth. And if you wait until they're very big, then it's just much more difficult, and you have to bring a lot more machinery to bear. So, as he says, when they acquire momentum, it's difficult to make things work. A person in attention wields remedies like weapons. Well, I think you should think of this more like rapiers than like nuclear bombs.
Sort of seeing through.
Well,
non-substantialness.
Well, that's one method. But that's a method that arises naturally. It's not if you're doing it, if you're thinking through it, it's not at all effective. It's completely non-effective. And actually, it's just a form of repression. So when it says to crushing reactive emotions such as craving as soon as they arise, let's take a look at what this means in practice. You crave something, or you want something, you're attracted to it. What do you actually do?
You want it?
Yeah, you've got to speak into the microphone.
You want it?
When you're doing it, you hold the mic so it's pointing right at your mouth, and then it's, yes, that's good. You're going to be a pop singer yet.
You want it, you grasp for it, or want to grasp for it.
Yeah, but what do you do with that in your practice?
You watch it happening, you experience it in your body, you feel it, you don't take it as being necessarily a real thing, but something that arises in your awareness. So you're conscious of it, and you don't feel like you automatically have to act on it, but it may not go away, so you may experience it some more. And you may just feel it, but you may not identify with it so strongly. I mean, at least that's the way I experience it these days.
Okay. Anybody else? Dave? It's Mike right in front of you.
this is very much what you wrote in your book, the little chart. My interpretation of it, you had a chart where you have the process of a reactive emotion, and it begins with sensing and the tone of it, pleasant, unpleasant, whatever. The interpretation, which is tied in with the symbolic associations it evokes, the reactive emotion itself, and then the action, the expression of it. And you made a great point about the sooner you catch it in attention, the more able you are to work with it. And I've also studied Gurdjieff's methods a lot, and this is one of the prime sources of fuel for attention, according to that method. And I don't think it contradicts anything in Buddhism.
What is?
The transformation of negative emotions.
Okay.
Can you help Michael closer?
Transformation of negative emotions, which requires a certain degree of presence to begin with before you can even do it. But the more present you are, the sooner you can catch these things and transform them, and thereby create more energy for attention.
Well, that's all very true. How do you do it? Don't you have something to say, Nava?
Yeah, she did. Got it.
Point it straight at your mouth.
Well, first you need to know what is happening. You need to identify that you have craving or lust or something for something, right? That's where it starts. And then you use one of the remedies.
Well, name a remedy and tell us how you use it. We'll take craving, grasping,
craving,
wanting
okay.
something. Yeah,
I'll feel it in my body. I feel the warmth, the heat, the wanting to hold it. And I'll just try to know it very, very well. And then I'm sure some emotions will come. I'll try to feel these emotions. I think that somewhere in this process there'll be moments of knowing and not knowing, I think. And that may bring me to some kind of release of the craving.
Okay, anybody else?
What about cutting?
What about cutting?
Well, I learned about that years ago in another meditation thing.
How do you do it?
Arena. How do you do it?
Yes.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. But actually, I have a little story about it because I had...
Well, I don't want to get off topic yet.
Okay, it's about cutting. Is somebody cut for me a reactive pattern that I was in? I was completely immersed in this, really sad because of something somebody said to me, and I was not in attention, and I got into this reactive pattern, and someone said something to me, and I felt almost like I was in this class because I heard it, and I snapped out of it, just like that. And I came back into attention. It was such a relief.
So somebody just said something?
Yes. And I snapped out of it.
Okay.
It was that they told me the truth, and I recognized it. And then I spent a lot of time in the last week trying to figure out how I could do that for myself.
Okay.
And I was reading your book over and over again.
Trying to find the answer in the book, right?
It was in the cutting section, and I'm reading it over and over.
Yeah, okay. Thanks. The way that you, quotation marks, crush an emotion. As Nava was explaining, you move into the experience of it. So, yes, you have to know that it's happening. Now, you can train yourself, and this is really what our practice is about, so that whatever's arising, you move into the experience of it, and it's just, you train yourself, so that's just what you do. So whatever's arising, you just move straight into the experience of it. And one's able to recognize imbalance, and one moves straight into the experience of imbalance, as we've discussed in previous classes. Now, when you do this, when you move into the experience, then you experience whatever's arising completely. And it is by experiencing it completely that it is transformed, released, or whatever you want to, however you want to describe it. There are, some would say, that's how you put an end to it. But there's a little bit more that's going on than that. Some would say that's how it's released. But release doesn't actually capture all that is going on, even though it's the most prevalent terminology in the Mahamudra and Dzogchen. I like Dave, I think that the Gurdjieff description is probably the most accurate. When something opens, its energy is there and arises as attention then. And so that's the transformation. But it's transformed by experiencing it. Number one thing about this is not a conceptual process. You don't have to think. In fact, if you do think you're transforming it, you're not. That's if the intellect's engaged, you're already separated from the experience. And so the best you can hope for is some form of repression at that point. When you're right in the experience, then it just shifts by itself. Now, the story you described, Catherine, where somebody said something, people can say things to us, or something can happen, quotation marks, outside us, which will shift the way we're experiencing it. And so that release and transformation happens spontaneously. But that's not something you can actually rely on.
Right.
Because you never don't know whether you're going to have the right person around you, don't know whether they're going to say the right thing. So even though it's very nice, oh, it just went like that. You can train so that that actually happens, but you train that by moving into the experience. So whenever you feel irritated, you experience irritation completely in the ways that all of you were describing. Body, emotions, stories, right in it. Now, most of the time, we don't do that. Why not? Anybody? Microphone?
I just said we're out of attention.
We either don't know what's going on, so we don't do it. Or, what if we do know what's going on? Do we do it all the time if we do it, know what's going on? Why not? Dan?
Well, as Molly mentioned, we're out of attention, or it's just too uncomfortable. We don't want to go there.
Okay. Now, there's an old Buddhist practice called renunciation. What is renunciation? It's giving up the old way of relating to experience. Dave?
That's another way of putting what I was thinking. One of the best remedies for me is to change the process in the interpretive stage and see it as an opportunity. If I drop a glass and it shatters all over the floor and there's broken glass and something goes off quick enough to see this is an opportunity, then I will experience it fully.
Okay, yeah, you are
mine.
And
get the
reminder.
Burst of attention, the yep. Burst of energy.
Yeah. So, the formal definition of renunciation, it is the desire or the wish or that I not suffer. How do you stop suffering? How do I stop suffering? Okay.
You give up the old way of relating to your experience.
Which is
not being in attention.
Right. And not experiencing,
not experiencing.
Just riding at some distance away and just right. Going all over the place. Okay? So, whenever you find yourself wanting something, what would be the old way and what would be the new way?
Well, the old way would be to not... to not be in attention. I mean, to not even probably recognize.
Oh, we're going to give people a little bit of credit here. They recognize that they want something.
Okay. The old way would just be to grab it.
Right.
To try to get it.
Mm-hmm.
Or to suffer for the lack of it.
Yes, you said, oh, I want right. that, I can't have it, that right. kind of thing. Okay, go on. Mm-hmm.
So it would be just immediately acting out with behavior and not really having any awareness of any intervening experience.
Okay, and what would be the renunciate way?
The renunciate way, where you don't want to suffer, is to recognize that you have the craving and... experience that, experience, as you've said many times, the body sensations, the feelings, the stories, the projections, the memories, all
but
of
it. But Stan says that's really uncomfortable.
Well, I find that when I have actually done it, it's not uncomfortable, but I fear that it will be uncomfortable. I mean, I have a fear that it will be, and so I just avoid it. But when I actually do those things. Mm-hmm. It's actually not uncomfortable. It's actually, it feels good to just be able to feel it, you know, be centered in it and not be running away from it.
Okay. So you're on record. Renunciation feels good. George?
One of the affirmations I've been working with is to see things just as they are. And the old way is to see the object of craving as really creating craving and something that you want to crave. And it isn't seeing the thing just as it is. You're putting a whole thing, a whole old pattern over it. Someone walks in and you're immediately attracted, and you, the old way would be to think you really want this person and that this person exerts a real draw on you.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that coming, and you just see, oh, the only thing that happened was this beautiful person walked in the door. That's all that happened. Everything else is the old way of reacting to it. And to be able to enjoy the person walking in the door without feeling you have to have that person.
Okay. What do you do with the attraction that arises?
You have to enjoy it.
Okay. There are two parts. I bring this up because a lot of people would work with that, what you're describing, intellectually. And they would say, oh, well, this is just what happened, and this is what happened. And we're all smart enough to know, oh, it's just what happened. And they won't deal with the emotional aspect of the experience at all.
You can't escape your experience.
I agree you can't, but the reason I'm saying this is that I want to caution you that when this beautiful woman or this handsome guy walks in the door and you feel all of this attraction arising, you don't say, oh, that's just a beautiful person. That's not going to work. Okay, that's not going to work. You have to feel all of the sexual desire, all of the desire for companionship, you know, or how it'll make you feel to be acquainted with that person or to have a connection with that person, and how you want others to look at you, and all of the things that go on with it. Actually experience the whole thing and know all of those things to be just experiences. And again, it isn't sufficient to label them as just experiences. So I'm going to go over this again and again. This cannot be done intellectually. If you do it intellectually, it is just a form of suppression. That's really, really important. So when they talk about crushing reactive emotions such as craving as soon as they arise, it means moving right into the experience of craving with all of its heart-rending, you know, tugging and pulling and all of that, and be right in it. That's how you, quotation marks, crush it. And it is uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable because we crave things because we're trying to avoid something else. And we're going to do that. Now, as we gain practice in this, we find that experiencing what the craving is distracting us from becomes less uncomfortable, becomes a lot less uncomfortable, in fact, than what the craving gets us involved in. And that's how it stops suffering. But in the beginning, it's a new way, it's a renunciate way of relating to experience. And it's and it takes a lot of practice to catch it as soon as it is arising. Time and time again, see people, they go into situations, and what they're doing, the first thing that they're doing in a new situation is taking care of themselves. I need this, I need this, I need this, I need this. If you're doing this practice, that's not the first thing you're doing when you walk into a situation. You walk into a situation and you experience, I need this, I need this, I need this, I need this, and you experience it all. And some of those needs are needs, that is, we feel that they are critical to our survival, which usually takes us back to pretty young parts of us. And some of those are wants, or just things we like to have but don't really need. And they take us back to more adult parts of ourselves. But how many of them do we actually need right in that moment? Probably very, very few. And the way that Tome Zongpo would be talking about working with this is that when you go into that situation, you experience all of that, this, and all of those needs, and you just experience them. And let yourself grow quiet within. And then you can actually relate to the situation, whatever it is. So is this clear to everybody? Deborah?
You said the craving distracts us from something else.
Mm-hmm.
What does it distract us from?
Well, you ever crave food?
Yes.
Okay. You want a little homework?
Okay.
Not sure I'll take it up with you because this is our last class. But so next time you crave food, ask yourself, if I didn't eat X right now, what would I have to experience? Now, for some people, it might be hunger. But in terms of food cravings, there's often other emotions. Loneliness, uncertainty, shame, guilt. So we eat to stuff it down or distract us. You follow? Okay, Catherine?
Recognizing the need, experiencing the needs, and then you're experiencing everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Is this kind of like looking at a catalog and thinking, I want this, I want that, I want this, and then not acting on it, which is what I do all the time.
How do you feel at the end?
Completely peaceful.
Okay.
Yeah. Is that kind of what you're talking about? Experiencing the needs and wants, and then not doing anything about it.
Well, probably in a large number of cases, when you experience the needs and wants, you realize that you don't need to do anything
right.
about it. Yeah, so you're able to let go. But it's by experiencing them and saying, "Oh, it's an experience. I don't actually have to act on it." John?
Maybe you'll get to the point where you won't even pick the catalog up. It'd be the best place. Let's just rebound it up. Some interview with Tenzin Gyatso, when they asked him if he'd done anything that he regretted for the day, and he said that he had a cracker after in the evening.
Yes. Well, he's if he was fasting after the noonday meal, then that was something that would violate his intention, so he regretted it. Okay. Other points, yes?
I have a question. How do you go into the experience if you're teaching a class or driving a car or performing surgery or...
Well...
Just carrying on with your life.
Okay. I'm sitting here teaching. Now, while I'm teaching, all kinds of things can come up. George's beautiful girl can walk into the room. Okay. I can experience things from seeing a beautiful woman. Maybe I get hungry while I'm teaching. Maybe somebody says something that irritates me. This ever happen? So, you know, or maybe someone says something and everybody thinks it's brilliant and I get jealous. You know, all kinds of things can happen. But as those are arising, what prevents me from experiencing them right as they arise?
You may have other things to do, like run a meeting.
So, how does running a meeting prevent you from experiencing what is arising?
Well, my sense is that if you really experience it, you sort of stop.
How long does it take?
I know where you're leading.
What are you experiencing?
A split second.
What are you experiencing right now? You said, I know where you're leading. What were you experiencing right at that point?
That you can come into awareness.
No, that's what you were thinking. What were you experiencing?
A surge of energy.
Okay, so experience it. How's that? How long does it take?
Not very long.
And how do you feel if you actually experience it?
Connected, present.
Will this help you run the meeting or not?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I think... I think the reason you asked this question is because the idea is I can only have attention on one thing, and I have to be. I can only think about one thing at a time. But you can think and feel at the same time. And the fact is that if you are actually feeling what's going on in you, you may be more in touch with the meeting, so... how you are thinking about things will actually be closer, will be a more appropriate response. Now, this is not how we are used to functioning. We're used to, particularly in meetings, we shut down the body, we shut down the emotions, and we have trot out our intellect. We all know how well that works. Why? Because the intellect is always in service of our emotions anyway, and because everybody is shut down their emotions. Nobody knows what emotions they're feeling, and so nobody knows what they're saying. Now, have you ever had that experience at a meeting?
Sure.
Right. What would a meeting be like? Do you have a meeting coming up soon?
No.
Oh, yes, you do. Okay. What I'm going to suggest is at this meeting, you make a point of making everybody be in their emotions and see how the meeting goes. You don't have to worry about getting fired. You can have fun now. Okay.
I don't know if I'm changing a whole subject or not, but I want to know something about number 36.
Go ahead.
How does this whole process here differ from just being in a state of constant mahamudra, which then makes it feel like something I can't do because it's too hard?
Do you think you could do this?
Do what?
What it says in number 36?
Sometimes I can do it.
Well, okay. If you think you can do this sometimes, we're not going to call it mahamudra.
Why? I don't get it.
Because if you call it mahamudra, you think you can't do it.
Oh. Okay. I'll take that.
I mean, the reason that we have many, many different forms of instruction is that one way of describing how to practice works for one person, and another way of describing how to practice works for another person. So if you find a way that speaks to you and you can use, then just do it. And don't worry about what it's called or whether it's this or that. If it speaks to you, do it. If you connect with it.
So it's just kind of bringing up words without, what I was doing was bringing up words without putting any kind of juice into it, in a sense, or actually, I wanted to call it by a fancy name or something. Yeah. I don't know.
Right, but I mean, we don't need to call it by a fancy name. It doesn't make it, what's it Shakespeare said? A rose by any other name would smell as sweet. Mm-hmm. So, you can call it a fancy Latin name, but it doesn't change the scent of the rose, does it?
No.
No. So, if we find an instruction, there are all kinds of instructions, and some are expressed very simply, and some are expressed in very technical language, and some speak to one kind of person, some speak to another. The main thing is, do you know how to work with experience and how to experience it? And if you know how to do that, that's fine, whatever you call it. Okay. Anybody else?
37.
Mm-hmm.
Direct all the goodness generated by this effort to awakening. I think I know what it means, when after we meditate, so we do the how do you do it every moment?
Well, whenever you feel you've done something good, then just say, okay, there was something good. Let me experience that. That having done something good. So, and let me experience it so that I don't experience attachment, pride, whatever. Just experience it. That way it does the same transformation process and contributes to the awakening. And one way of doing that is whenever you experience something good, you say, well, whatever good has come of this, may all of that good go to others. You let it go completely. But in order to let it go completely, you actually have to experience it.
Yeah.
Okay? And you do that moment to moment. You don't have to wait until a certain time has passed. You see a homeless person, you give them something, you do it right then. Maybe, like, I was at the airport today, and I flew in on El Al, and so there was a, I don't know whether he was a rabbi, but an elderly Jewish person was trying to get a suitcase out of the carousel, so he was having difficulty, so I just reached in, pulled it out, and gave it to him. And you direct that goodness to awakening, just mentally make a note of it.
Is it in order, first of all, to make a note that you did it, or not to hold on to the feeling that you did it, or
not to hold on to the feel? Well, you did it, okay.
Right.
It's not really so much not holding on to the feeling that you did it. It's that it arises, and rather than say, "Oh, I did something good," you just say, "Okay, that was good." And it's more not making a big deal out of it, but not ignoring it either. I mean, when you do something good, how do you feel? What do you experience when you do something good?
Well, you feel good.
Okay. Now, what happens when you move right into that experience? That feeling good experience.
I feel good, and that's it.
Yes, but when you and you move right into the feeling good experience,
right.
What happens?
Then it ends.
Yeah, exactly. And you kind of wake up in a certain sense. Yeah, that's what they're talking about here. And you feel good, and you move into it, and then you kind of realize it's no big deal, but you're a little more awake. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But you're not holding on to anything now, are you?
No.
No. So it isn't saying, oh, I'm not... it's not the mental idea or the intellectual idea, I'm not going to hold on to this. You just move right into the experience, and it has the same effect with good that it has with negative reactions. It transforms it into higher level of attention.
Yes, I understand that, but you actually need to give it away. I mean, you do it, and you actually need to give it. There is a point here that. You need to do that step, right?
Yeah, that's right.
That's
what's being said here is all experience, you transform it as it arises. Good, bad, whatever.
Right. So you mean consciously give it away?
No, that's not what Nava was pointing to. If you do something, some kind of virtuous action, and you feel good about it, move into the experience of feeling good. And any attachment to it will naturally release right there. You're not holding on to it. Now it's the next thing. Okay. Now, if you're not able to do that, then you mentally give it away, which tends to eliminate the tendency to attach to it. But if you can just move into the experience and let it release, that's the higher level of working with it. Okay? Susan?
Kind of along the same line, would you say, are the 37 practices a description or a set of instructions? Because I find that just, I'm able to make